on behalf of Heather Witt, our chairman sitting right over here, welcome to our State of the City address sponsored by Waste Connections. Hank Ross.
Thank you, Mark. A very kind introduction. And there was some truth to a little bit of that. I'm not really sure. Bob Ritney, at one time, we have a wonderful relationship with Waste Connections. At one time, we were the number one recycling community in Oklahoma. We're still up there. Where are we at nowadays?
You know, I was just speaking with Brittany before she got up to give her presentation, and we have changed the recycling pattern here in Chickasha. We've actually upped the service to a very weak service, and with that, and we've seen that growth the last 8 months. We're really not sure what's driving it, but here's what we know: it's almost doubled from the tons that we're picking up. We're at an all-time high at about 30 tons a week coming out of Chickasha, so that's a great thing.
So we're up there, the communities are
solid. We're good, yes, we're good. Right now, we're at a blend and an average of about 47.8% participation with the total people here in Chickasha. And compared to the other towns that I service, you guys lead that. You guys are the leader by far.
Thank you so much. Thanks for Waste Connections. Thank you, Mark, for allowing me to say a few words. I thought I had till 8:30, and you informed me I have till 9. So we're going to go to about 8:40 and answer questions after that, maybe a little bit sooner than that. But I do want to recognize a few people in the room. When I woke up this morning, and you know, this meeting was at 7:30, and last year we did this at noon. I saw the rain, and I kind of divided the crowd in half again in my head, and I'm very thrilled to see everyone out here this morning. So thank you so much for coming out here this morning. I'd like to recognize our elected officials, Senator Justice. Thank you so much for being here this morning. I can tell you as a mayor, anytime I just pick up the phone and have a question, I can call the senator or Representative Perriman back here, either one of them, and same day service, they call me back, and they really want to know what we think, what's going on in our community. And they really want to know what we should be doing from a municipal standpoint. So I appreciate both of you so much. I'd like to recognize Councilwoman Loggins is over here, one of our new councilwomen. I think it's the only council person we have here this morning. She's new to our council, and I'm very thrilled to have her. She's an engineering type person who does quality assurance. So I know when she tells me the minutes look good, they look good. She read every word of them. Don't worry about all that. And I think it'd be remiss if I didn't recognize people like Bob Hayes and Steve LaForge and other people who really run the city. So I want to recognize you guys for being here this morning. So I really appreciate all that. But, you know, I was thinking this morning about what I wanted to talk about. And I've had the honor to be mayor for almost 6 years. And I've also had the opportunity to serve on council for almost 3 years. So I'm almost a decade into this situation. And I've been so fortunate to be with a group of council people who are progressive. And I've also been very fortunate to be with a group of city managers who are progressive. You haven't met our new city manager, Alan Gard. Alan's been here almost 2 months now, Alan, and he's done an amount of work for about 6 months. I'm really impressed with Alan, the amount of material he puts out of his office. And so my dad used to tell me years ago that we were two funerals away from progress. And I think I'm going to start out by telling you a little bit of story about me and maybe why I came back and where I think this city has gone and where the city can go. But for those who may not know, I grew up here. My grandfather came here in 1913, so I'm third or fourth generation person here in town. And I lived here in 1981, went off to college and graduate school, and really had no reason to think about coming back. And there really wasn't anything I really talked about. And I ran hospitals for a living. King, good morning, how are you back there? And I always tell people I'm a recovering hospital administrator. It takes a while to get through all that. I ran hospitals for almost 15 years, and I lived in Texas, and I was a vice president of a healthcare company. I had 4 states, and I get on a plane on Monday. I come back on Friday afternoon, and my wife says, the best time ever in our marriage. I mean, you know, I've been married 27 years. So. And we were raising our family, and we never thought about coming, you know, unless Oklahoma, never really thought about coming back to church. I was one of those kids that was gone. And then my parents got frail, and they needed attention. So I kind of maneuvered my way and said, well, if I can run these hospitals, I was in Texarkana, Texas at the time. If I can run these hospitals out of here, can I run these hospitals out of Oklahoma City? And so my wife and I moved to Oklahoma City. We had our children. We're raising our kids in Edmond schools. And, you know, we're living the dream. And my wife's in El Reno, a very grounded person. And she turned to me, and I took another job with Mercy Healthcare System. I was vice president of operations for them. And now I'm only working in Oklahoma City. I'm working for a Catholic hospital. And hospitals are great places to work, but what happens, Keene, if you get promoted, you gotta leave, you gotta move. And we're at a place where our kids are in elementary school, and my wife walks up to me and says, we had moved 4 times in 6 years. And she says, we're not moving anymore. And she says, I don't want to raise my kids in Edmond, Oklahoma. I want my kids to go to, you know, either Chickasha or Reno. I want my kids to know that every house doesn't have a 3-car garage. I'll never forget that. She said that to me. And I said, I don't have a job in Chickasha. You know? And she says, go create one. And literally, that's what happened. I resigned out of Mercy. I lived in Edmond for the first year. I came down here and I started with this healthcare company, Ross Healthcare. And my whole idea was to partner with hospitals and start post-acute services. And I found enough people to give me some money to help start this company. And I was commuting back and forth. And it's the best decision we ever made. And we're able to move here about a year later. I'm so thankful that I was able to help participate in the growth of a company that's almost statewide today. But more importantly, I have one child out of college, and one child's going to be a sophomore at Oklahoma State, and I have one's going to be a junior in high school. And I think what the treat to me is, and it's a very personal thing to me, is my kids are really grounded. You know, we dropped them off at homes for spending the night, and you think, what in the world are we doing? And we they go out and say, Dad, we go to a restaurant. Will we ever go to a restaurant where you don't know a third of the people? I go, I hope not. You know? And they leave the house, and I would say to them the same thing my dad would say when I left the house in high school was, remember, you're a Ross, which really ruined all my plans. But, socioeconomically, my kids understand some challenges. And I have nothing against Edmond, Oklahoma. It's a great, prosperous community. But we want our kids to see, kids who struggle. We want to see, I unfortunately had the opportunity to attend. We had these two teenagers who drowned, and Hatch was one of the teenagers. He played on my kids' basketball team, on my high school team. And George Isaac Hatch's funeral last Monday, and I, at the First Baptist Church, I don't know what that church holds, maybe 450, 500 people were there. And I looked around that crowd, and white, black, Hispanic, all these people sitting next to each other, celebrating the life of this young kid whose life was taken way too young. Now, I don't think I've ever been more proud as a man. This is not Ferguson. This is a community that has its challenges. This is a community that we gotta continue to do things better. But I looked around that crowd and the socioeconomic differences in that crowd and the skin color and everything else, and we're all sitting together, saying our last prayers for this young man who lost his life, unfortunately. Maybe more fun. So when I moved down here in about 2003, this is not about me. This is about, I'm just a small part of this. This is about a council. This is about progressive city managers. This is about progressive leaders in this community. And I was asking Bob Hayes earlier this morning, I said, tell me if I'm wrong. But in the 60s, early, late 70s, we had a really progressive church. I mean, Bob, you're a part of that. And I'm sure, Curtis Brooks and Elmore DeHarts and John Mosley. I mean, there's people in this room who are involved in a very progressive church. And then, for some reason, we kind of lost our focus. And we went through some period in the 70s and 80s, in my opinion, that really hurt us. This is when we had divided city council races, and we couldn't raise your utility rates without a vote of the people. By the way, we lost about $75 million in those 22 years, the infrastructure costs. And then when I came back in about 2002, and I think I'm correct in this, the city was still a little bit divided. I mean, we were starting to come together, but the school really didn't work with the city really didn't work with the EDC didn't work with the chamber. I remember going to one of my first EDC meetings and chamber meetings, and we just, we weren't clicking. But then I want to give some credit to, Mayor Elliott and some others who started thinking this, they asked this question. And the question was very simple. It said, what kind of city do we want to be? And why can't we create a city where people want to live? And I think about that often. Why can we create a city where people want to live? And that thought pattern started happening. And I think over the last decade or so, this city is going through a renaissance. And I'm a science and statistical information here about where I think we're making progress. I really feel like there's no more fractions. I really feel like that people are really working together to do the right thing. Many of us in this room are at those meetings, and I think there's a sense of pride and unity. I think people don't always agree all the time, which is fine, like a tourism issue or whatever, but that's fine. We want diversified opinions. We want people to come in and say what they think they should do to make the city better. And if you kind of close your eyes, and don't fall asleep, but if you kind of close your eyes and think back where this city was 10 years ago, look at the progress we've made. And there's no interurban, no retail development, no lights. I mean, I can go through a litany of projects. But I think the theme is, what kind of city do we want to live in? What kind of city do we want to be? I think we started making that progress. And as mayor and council and other leaders, we're never satisfied with the progress. It never happens fast enough, but you got to eat an elephant one bite at a time. And I really think that we are making a lot of progress. And I want to cite a couple of things. The metric I use as a mayor is, I think the number one metric is median household income. I really believe a rising tide raises all ships. And I came in last night from Davenport, and I went to the office and I Googled up a couple of statistical things. In 2000, the year 2000, which was the census prior to 2010, in 2000, the median household income for Chickasha was $26,369. And the median household income in 2012 is $36,360. So a 28% increase in median household income. Now, I wouldn't be fair to say that our oil and gas industry has been a big part of that. We are so fortunate to be where we're at from a geographical standpoint, and that's a big part of that. We're coming up, but Oklahoma's median household income is $44,000. So we're still, around 7,000 below the Oklahoma average, but our median household income is moving in the right direction. Another statistics, median house selling prices. What does the average house sell for in Chickasha? And in 2000, the average house sold for $49,000. And the average house in 2012 sold for $82,940. A 41% increase in housing values. So I feel like, and we're going to talk a little bit more about sales tax and things like that, I feel like we're really moving in the right direction, those two indicators. I also looked, this is an amazing statistical page that had a column that said the most common first names in Chickasha amongst the deceased. I actually tracked that. So the three most common first names of those who died, I guess it gets it out of the obituary, was Mary, James, and William. And the three most common names, last names, of those who are deceased is Smith, Johnson, and Williams. So if your name is Mary Johnson, you might want to come talk to me. I have a hospice company. You might have a but I thought it was interesting. This is interesting. I mentioned to a couple of people about this. This is the journal record, the book of lists. And they list cities and towns in the Oklahoma City area by sales tax. And they list 20 towns by the amount of sales tax that people collect. And out of the 20 towns, we're number 7 in sales tax collections in the cities surrounding Oklahoma City. And what's interesting about that is we're number 7 in sales tax collection. We're a county seat. You know, I'm as everyone's concerned about the oil and gas and the drop in oil prices coming up a little bit, well, I still drive around town and there's lots of activity. Our hotels are full, our restaurants are full, and there seems to be a lot of things still happening. So I'm going to give you some sales tax data here in a second. But we're 7th largest city around sales tax. We're ahead of Mustang, we're ahead of El Reno, Del City, War Acres, we're ahead of Guthrie, and we're ahead of a lot of towns that have a lot of name recognition. And what's funny is we're 7th in sales tax and we're 11th in population around Oklahoma City. And so I thought it was interesting. Now around Tulsa, we had all the cities in Oklahoma. There's only 4 towns in Oklahoma in the Tulsa area that are ahead of Chickasha in sales tax. So what I'm saying is we're the 11th largest community in Oklahoma in sales tax. Is that a surprise? We're ahead of towns like Claremore, Sand Springs, Bixby, Glenpool, Jinx. Our sales tax revenue numbers are higher than all those other towns. So, you know, from a population standpoint, we've always been around the 22nd or 23rd largest community population-wise in Oklahoma. But from a sales tax standpoint, and that's how cities really fund themselves, we're the 11th largest sales tax community in Oklahoma, according to the Journal Record. Do you understand about that? Is that about right? A couple other interesting things I think why we're trending up. Our sales tax is up about 4.8% for last month, and we're up from last year about 7.1%. And so for those who may not quite understand is, Oklahoma is one of 2 states now, I think, Gina, that only are dependent on sales tax.
For cities.
For cities. We had no other revenue source. When Alan came
from...
We're the only one now. When he came from Texas, he says, you get no ad valorem, no oil and gas. We are... Oklahoma is solely dependent on sales tax for their cities to run. And I literally go to mayor conferences, whereas basically the rule is, if you don't have a Walmart in your community, you're going to die. And this is why a lot of Western Oklahoma and other small communities are struggling. And I go to conferences and mayors are trying to get together how to get an ambulance. And so we're so fortunate to be in this geographical place that we have such opportunity. And this is, I was, and Christy's back there, and I think she'll verify this. When people look at economic development and to relocate and maybe invest in an interurban and do sales tax increase, here are the indicators they look for. Are you near a interstate access? Well, last time I counted, Chickasha has 7 highways that intersect to and from Chickasha. Are you near or have a 4-year university? We have a 4-year university, and we also have, within an hour or two, a research university in one. Do you have high-rated secondary schools? And if you look at the investment our schools have made in infrastructure, I applaud that so much because Christy and others can tell you when we bring economic people to town, we're showing those people around and the Y's run to the school. They want to know where their kids are going to school. They really don't ask about the academic part of the school. They want to know what it looked like. And Carrie and other people have done all this work in our schools. I applaud you. It's a great asset for Chickasha. They want to know about qualified workforce. You know, we have a regional career tech center right here in town. They want to know if you have access to a world airport. And we have, you know, we're 25 minutes out of Will Rogers. I I tell my Edmond friends, I can get downtown Chickasha faster from Chickasha than you can from North Edmond, and you can't. I mean, we're so close. But the number one thing they talk about is, what is the quality of life? What does that mean? Well, quality of life means a lot of things. I'm back to that theme of Mary Elliott and others. We want to create a place where people want to live. And this is why we try to put some money in our downtown. We put lights over Viaduct, and we work really hard on community development. I always joke that, you know, I want to take the first person who didn't mow their lawn and flog them in downtown, and maybe it would help a little bit for the rest of the season. But we want to do things that really make our city look. We want to do TIFF attractions. And if you don't know this area, when Ann Urban thought about coming here with your taxpayer dollars, the Economic Development Council, we gave you $50,000 to do the dirt. But we knew we didn't do something out here to spur economic activity. This will never develop. If you're not familiar with aerial development and all the things that are happening out here, retail development is a huge part of quality of life. And Steve is sort of off this side of the TIFF. And if all things come into play, and things are laid out as planned, and we get ODOT to work with us a little bit, we're going to put about an additional $38 million worth of retail construction out in this area. That would bring in about $72 million worth of retail sales a year. $72 million. And I did the math on that last night. If all that came to tuition, and that's based on 2 box stores, a couple new restaurants, and some other things. If all that happened, that'd raise our sales tax in Chickasha $2.9 million a year, or it'd raise about 25%. So when we talk about quality of life, and retail, and sales tax, we have to create an environment where people want to come in. But when you look at those factors, and I'm back on the quality of life, and people have heard me talk about this, this is why I feel so strongly about a community center. And for those who may not understand is, you go to communities we compete with, the Normans, you know, the Yukons, and other places, South Oklahoma City, you know, we are really trying to set ourselves up to be a commuter town. We want to create a place where people can live here in a little small town, a little big town, but go work in Oklahoma City, they want to do that. And I think we can do that. We have to compete with other entities. And you look at those other entities, and when you're looking at bringing those manufacturer people in, you're looking at those 30 and 40-year-olds, those middle managers, and as their wife runs off to school, the other thing they're talking about is, what can we do? What can we do for recreation? What can we do for fun? And a lot of us feel like the next step we got to take is build a community center. And what I mean by that is, we have an outdated YMCA. And you go to some of these other communities, they have beautiful YMCAs with indoor aquatic centers and things like that. And we've been a small group of us meeting for almost a couple of years. I think it's time to pull the trigger. We think, we're close, and Carrie and I, we think we can build a new community center for around $9 million. Indoor aquatics, a place for our swim team, brand new community center. And there's about 3 locations we're looking at. And we're really thinking heavily about putting a bond issue out, a property bond issue, sometime late this year to do that. And if all that comes to tuition, which I think it will, we have to do those kind of things. This is not a situation where we're going to build something to be ahead of somebody. We're building something to keep. If we want retail development, we want some growth in our town, we want to increase sales tax, we want people to move to Chickasha, we want to create an environment where people want to live, we have to do projects like that. So you're going to be hearing more about that in the near future. I'm not trying to, a lot of us have been talking about that, but those are the kind of projects that we need to do. A lot of people talk about water, and I get it. I'm always perplexed when people walk up to me and say, gee, Mayor, what are you doing about water? And I want to say, well, just come to a city council meeting. Because I feel like some city council meetings, all we do is talk about water. And the citizens are very generous to extend the capital improvement tax, which is going to raise about $24 million over 10 years. If we did that about a year and a half ago. And guess what? We're putting all that towards water and infrastructure. We're putting about $11 million a year into our water treatment plants. We're going to put $11 million into our water treatment plant, nuclear well system, and everything else. Then we're going to take some other money. We're going to do some drainage projects. And another thing we've committed to do as a council is we're putting $1 million a year over the next 10 years to roads to improve our streets. And when we improve our streets, we're just not milling up a street. We're looking at the drainage aspect of the street. We're looking at the water pipes of our street, our sewer pipes of our street, and we had engineers come in. And so when we do an area, we're going to complete that area. If you notice all the new corners, all the new drainage areas we put in, we're doing things with water. So our water problem is $150 million. If someone would write me a check, we could start doing that tomorrow. But we got to take this in seconds. And I know, just to be frank, I know an argument's going to be when you talk about a community center is, well, you need to put that towards water. Yeah. But we can't just do one thing. We got to work on water. We got to work on infrastructure. We got to work on quality of life. We got to work on several things at one time. We just can't do one thing. And I think that's going to be the biggest argument against this is we need to put that towards water. We're going to fix the water system. The water system is going to be fixed. And a few of those projects I want to talk about in our water system is, and other capital improvement projects, is $1 million towards streets. We're putting about $1.1 million a year towards our water treatment plant. And Alan, that will finish, what, 3 years from now?
That's about right.
About 3 years. We'll have basically this two phases to a water treatment plant, and about 50% of it will be redone. And we'll have a new, updated, modernized water treatment plant. We're putting about $165,000 a year for drainage projects. I was sad about the flood. I've been joking that. I love Stuart Ferber, and he came 4 years ago. When Stuart came, the drought started. And Alan's been here about 2 months, and I said, Alan, you've been here 2 months, you cured the drought. I can't believe you had that. When Alan came the first week, unfortunately, we had a police-involved shooting, and I think the next week we had tornadoes north of town, and the third week we had flood, and the fourth week I go, Alan, what's going to happen next week? He goes, locusts. I don't know what's going to happen. But we're working on drainage projects and doing all that kind of stuff. We're going to put about $400,000 a year in our parks. We need to upgrade our parks, keep our parks up and standardized. We're going to put about $300,000 next year into our emergency sirens for our tornado sirens. We tried to piecemeal that system together over the years. It's just done. And we need a new upgraded weather warning system. We're putting about another $150,000 in splash pads, living in splash pads from Chain Springs Park. Another $100,000 for drainage projects. We'll put about $500,000 into airport hangars out at the airport. We have a municipal airport authority that kind of collects its own revenues. We'll do about $500,000 out there. We'll put about another $900,000 into wastewater and water projects. So there's another water project we're doing. Remember you got those letters in the mail that said THMs, that our water wasn't, the DEQ is saying our water wasn't safe. What did they say? It wasn't safe, but it's safe. You had to drink 10,000 gallons of it a day, you made me come sick. And we were listed with another 150 other towns that did that. And we need to fix that, so we're going to spend $968,000 to fix that. We got the stirrers in our tanks, and we got to do another filtration system at the water treatment plant. But it's about $1 million fix, and we've committed to do that in next year's budget. Another $300,000 water line replacement. I'm talking about within the city. We're going to do that. Alan and I and some others met with the Fort Cobb Conservatory. We have to find a way to replace our line from Fort Cobb to Chickasha. That line is beyond its years. If you may not know this, when we buy our water from Fort Cobb, by the time it gets to Chickasha, we lose 27%. And so we have to find a way to fix that line. There's some creative ways we can do that. It's about a $30 million project. I hope we can wrap that up in the next year or so and get that all done with Fort Cobb. We've been at Anadarko, Western Farmers, and we're all coming together at the table to say, what's the most efficient way, an effective way, cost-effective way to do this? So we'll have some partners in that. Put another $1.5 million into wastewater line replacement. We're putting about $2 million this year into automatic meter reading. for water. If you don't know that, we still go around and pull your meter, and we look at you, we pull your manhole cover, and we look at your meter, and we read your meter. And we want to electronically do that. We want to replace all the meters within the city. And so we hired a company to do that. It helps with water leaks and other things. The other thing is, to be frank about it, is that as water meters age, they slow down. And so people may not be paying for the water they're actually using most of the time. We need to be good stewards of our money. We need to accurately reflect the water usage for our individuals. So we're going to replace all our meters in town. I hope that's done in the next 12 months or so, Ireland. We share that all done. So that's about $16 million worth of capital projects we're going to do next year. And that's a list of a little bit what we're going to do. What I thought was interesting is this is a, I want to talk a little bit on the general fund side. So that's our capital side. Our general fund, where does your money go? When you have a, we collect about almost 9 cents on a dollar in sales tax. But what you have to recognize is the city only receives just less than 4%. The state gets another 4%. We have economic development tax. We have firefighters tax. We have all these other taxes on board. So the city only really survives just less than 4 cents. And out of that 4 cents, what I thought was interesting is that 61.9% of the sales tax revenue we collect for the general fund goes to two items, fire and police. Police is about 34% and fire is about 27%. So 61% of the money we collect goes to public safety. And to be, and we know as a mayor or as a councilwoman or as an elected official, the number one job we do is to protect the public. That's our number one mission. And I think by dedicating that amount of resource to our fire and police, I demonstrate that. If you haven't been to our new police station, please go by. Our renovated police station, we put out $1.4 million into our police station. It's as nice as any police station you'll find across the state, you know, around the state. It's a police station that can be for the next 30 or 40 years. It's way overdue. But our people who are first responders, 62% of our money goes to from our sales tax general fund to that. And then the next biggest item is we put about 11.9% in public works. Those are the street people who fix or repair our streets. Those are the guys that go around and pick up your limbs. I don't think there's another city out there that goes around and picks up your limbs. And we do things like that. And they do immense amount of work, but they're only about 11% of our budget. The next largest item is parks and recreation, about 10.4%. Then we get into the general government and administration overhead, it's only about 9.5%. So Gina and Alan and all their administrative people was less than 10% of what we collect. Community development, which is code enforcement, building permits, and all the things that we do for that, they're 2.5% of our general fund revenue. I think I'm fair to announce is our community development in terms of code enforcement. We're moving that from the community development office to our police department. Our police department, and they've been a series of meetings and vision statements that our police department will be responsible for community development. Alan's done this in other cities and been highly effective, and that's what we're going to do. And our library is about 4%. So when you complain about sales tax, I'm not saying this group does, but some people do, I don't know why. We're about this. Our sales tax is about 60%, but we're about the 60% top. So right at 9, we're not the cheapest, but a lot of cities have 10% sales tax. And I know Chris Mosley was in Little Rock, Arkansas last week. He sent me a sales tax receipt, and their sales tax is 11%. Okay. And you think about all, you know, things don't get cheaper. Things get more expensive. And we don't have a big pot of money at the end of the year on the city council about, well, what are we going to do to spend this? I mean, things are, so there's always increasing pressures on our sales tax. There's always increasing pressures on our budget. We haven't raised, from an operational standpoint, our sales tax, well, I don't know when, a long time. So although we've grown our sales tax by new development, the percentage hasn't changed. So here's what you get for your sales tax. You as a citizen, and Alan, correct me if I say anything wrong here, spend $2.89 a day for these services.
Each household.
Each household.
Each household.
This is per household. $2.89
per day what you get.
So for $2.89 a day, you get a dollar of that goes to police. 79% of that goes to fire. And if you don't, I think you probably know, we're one of the handful of communities who still run a paramedic program out of the park. Guys, we have a class A plus emergency response system. Most towns contract out ambulance services. It's a very expensive way of doing things at times. We really have a Cadillac way of delivering healthcare from a first responder standpoint. And we were one of the first cities to start that when I was a kid in the mid-70s. And we continue to today, but we spent about 79 cents on per household on fire. We spent about 34 cents per household on public works, 27% on administration, 6% community development, 12 cents on library, and 30 cents on parks and recreation. I'll give you that. So we spend $2.89 per household per day for all those services. My argument is, I think we're pretty good stewards here. I think it's a good bag. I think if you look at what you get from a city standpoint, I think those are some real positive things. A few other comments. We have an industrial park out north of town. A lot of us, if you go out there, we have a kind of road to nowhere. We have about almost $7 million in our industrial park. This is really previous administrations that have really done this, but we have to get something above ground. We have water, sewer, gas all right there to go. We've worked with Christy and others, have worked really hard on retail development and other things. We had to get something above ground on the industrial park. And what I can say is we had two companies who are fairly close to hopefully getting an agreement with us. Am I saying anything out of tune, Christy? We're close. We're not there.
Some of them are ready. I mean, it's like they're so ready, but they still have in-house.
Yeah. And if we're able to launch that and get that off, I think it'd be like what we did out here with Interurban. Get something above ground. I think it's a real important thing to do that. Get something in our industrial park. And, you know, we give incentives for that. We give an economic development tax. We give quality job incentives for. We watch that very closely. We kind of parallel the state standards with all that. But we're not just bringing someone to build a building. We're bringing someone to bring an additional job. So I'm really happy about that. We haven't gone out and seen the new housing addition at Sleepy Hollow. It's really probably the first housing addition since the late 70s, early 80s. We worked hard on that. We're trying to, we had cheap housing in Chickasha. We kind of had expensive housing in Chickasha. We really missed out on that $130,000, $160,000 house range. And, they can put up to, 300 units out there if it takes off. And so we'll have a new housing addition. We have 6 or 8 homes in construction now. And that's exciting to actually work on the housing development. Again, why do we do that? We do it to bring people to town. So they spend money and spend sales tax money and do that kind of stuff. The bypass, we had a meeting with ODOT a few weeks ago. James Hicks hates the bypass. James, who owns the downtown boot shop, I told James the other day, I'm going to name it the James Hicks Memorial Bypass. And I know James 40 years, you laugh about it, we do those things. But I think the bypass is a necessity for a community. If you look at the traffic counts at 4th and Choctaw today, there are around 23,000 vehicles. If you look at ODOT's projection, on those traffic counts by 2030, it goes to 57,000 miles. If you haven't drove from on 81 Highway from really the Fort Worth area all the way to I-40, what they're trying to do is make 81 a really four lane all the way through to help some of the traffic off I-35. And so this is high priority for ODOT. And we're one of the few areas that don't have a four-lane bypass or four-lane access. Really, I'll tell you what, about 4 years ago, ODOT came and visited with us, about five, when I was first mayor, and said, either do this or don't do it. We've been talking about the bypass for 30 years. And they said, if you don't do it...
Talked about it since 1968.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't do it, then we're going to do something else. And they're really sensitive, and rightly so, to community input and community awareness. So we started, we said we want to do it. We met with them. We got to push farther west. And I think the bypass would be essential for Chickasha, around, it'll connect right through Highway 62 and 81, right through near our industrial park, come west of town. We'll hopefully be able to annex that area, come south of town, connect on southbound. But where we're at today is I asked some ODOT officials, and I said, unofficially, I feel like this bypass could be built in 10 years. And they don't disagree with that. Now, there's an 8-year plan, and Central Justice will represent Perryman to help me understand this more. If I say something correct, but I understand if you're on the 8-year plan, doesn't mean you're on the 8th year. You can be moved up further on the 8-year plan based on priority. And when you look at this corridor that we have now on 81 Highway, it's a high safety risk. It's a high accident risk. And they got to do something different from a traffic standpoint. So I feel like, personally, that I think the bypass will happen. They were supposed to buy right-of-way by this time. They got a lot of, I think, about $7 million to buy right-of-way. There's some environmental issues that popped up on the west side of town. They had to put everything on hold for a little bit. So they're tackling those environmental issues. And then they'll have another public hearing. And I hope that we are getting the 8-year plan on the bypass. And Center Justice, Representative Perryman, am I missing anything on that? Or am I fairly accurate?
Yeah, the right-of-way is on... The 8-year plan is actually broken down. Get a copy of that to anybody that wants it, but it's online too, but it's in the front side to get your plan, but in the back side.
Yeah. Okay, since then we talked to them, they got to get this piece done. So I do think we'll have a bypass, and I think that will happen.
Well, that's what
29th Street
was.
Well, you know, 29th Street today is a de facto bypass. We have 4,000 to 5,000 cars a day coming in. And that's what's happening with 29th Street, so it's kind of de facto bypass. You know, some other things I want to mention and I'll close is that the city going to hire a special events coordinator. Alan, can I talk about the theater?
Sure.
Can I?
We're trying to work with the community theater to get it fire sprinkled. Right now they're limited to 4 weekends a year because they're not fire sprinkled. We think we could make that a real entertainment venue year round if we were to assist them in getting that done.
I kind of went, why are there not more events in the theater? We're going to use it for that. I didn't realize that. So the city looked at some grant issues with the arts community to get the community theater going. We're working in conjunction with the chamber and some other people to hire a full-time tourism person or a part-time tourism person to not only coordinate events in the downtown, but to coordinate more events in our ballparks and other areas. There's been some issues, I know, on social media about our ballparks, and I've been asking Alan a lot about this, and they're better. You know, you gotta remember, we built our ballparks in a floodplain. And the 24 inches of rain, thank God, you know, we had maintenance issues like everyone else, but our amount of tournaments are about the same. We're about one less tournament booked than there were the previous year. With some tournaments who've been canceled due to rainouts, there's nothing we can do about that. But I think the last week or so, our ballparks have come a long ways, and that's a $9 million investment. We're going to protect that. The Grady County Fairgrounds continues to do all their renovation. Some, I think, $20 million carrying the fairgrounds. About $20 million for fairgrounds. So things are doing well for that. I want to mention that on the 4th of July, the Main Street program is having a whole 4th of July thing. Alan, you want to say something about that?
Yeah, the Main Street program is sponsoring an event down at the Rock Island Depot. So that'll start out in the morning. go into the early afternoon, and then after that, get head out to Shannon Springs Park for the fireworks. So people can come and spend the entire day in Chickasha. The city's going to have a neat event down there called Touch a Truck. We're going to have a bunch of city vehicles, police cars, fire trucks, dump trucks. So kids can come down and put a fire hat on and play fireman for the day. So
it'll be
a lot of fun.
And then we had this retail development I spoke about. We do have a West TIF that will eventually be developed. And then we have 40 acres out here in Antisupil that the city owns. And we now have water and sewer to that site, the site ready to go. We have a hotel committed for that site. We're trying to do a hotel-restaurant combination. We have another hotel on Gore Street, so we have two more hotels going. And we actually told those hotel developers the other day through a letter saying, get on it. Our hotels are full. We're still busy. Our occupancy levels are still high. And don't wait around for oil prices. There's just too much activity going on in Chickasha. I feel confident we can fill two more hotels and raise the standard of our rooms. I hate being at that ballpark in the evening and I see all the taillights heading to Norman to go stuff. We want those taillights to turn around, come back here and stay and do this. So that's a little bit of a touch of what's going on in the city. I don't think I missed any big issues. I want to answer some questions, but I finished with this. Look where we were 10 years ago. I don't think anyone who's involved in our city like everyone in this room and recognizes all the work that's been done. And we're not happy with it. There's some more things that we got to do. I really envision 10 years from now what our city's going to look like. And I'm proud to be a mayor. I'm proud to be a small part of all that. I'm proud that maybe, you know, hopefully my kids come back to Chickasha. They can walk around and say, hey, my dad has something, my mother has something to do with that. That's why we do this public service. It's important to give back. And I enjoy it so much, immensely. I got so much support to help myself and others do this. So those are the things that are happening in the city. Does anyone have any questions? We really had everyone here.
City
moved
a splash pad at Shannon Springs.
You have a drainage issue.
Yeah, the splash pad at Shannon Springs has a leak underneath it, and it's all solid concrete, and it's hard to get to. So we're looking at demolishing that and looking at relocating it in a different place.
I did want to say, I think I started mentioning about the flood issues in downtown. Although we had a high flood, and any flood is bad, compared to historical proportions, it's much better than it used to be. I think all the work we've done around Lime Creek and others, and what was educated to me was, I didn't realize this, that in the 30s and 40s, we had a power plant out west of town, and east of town, excuse me, and the city used to generate their own electricity, and after that last major flood in 84, they went out there, and there was a dam out there to generate, you know, hydro water for the electric plant, and they took that dam. And that, I think, has helped tremendously on our flooding issue. The flooding in downtown a few weeks ago wasn't the Washita River. It was flash flood. It was our inability to get our water out of Lime Creek, and out of Lime Creek backed up around 6th Street over the bridge. We're getting that engineered now. So, you know, our flood issue in Chickasha is better, I think. I drove around that Sunday morning. I'm kind of nervous walking up to people in downtown. And they say, Mayor, it flooded, but it's not as bad as it used to be. they kind of do that. And so I think, you know, that's, you know, we're in a floodplain area, and that's an ongoing issue. But we have a lot of investment in downtown and a lot of dedicated merchants, and we need to do some work. We're going to find some ways to improve that situation there. Bad, tell me some things we're not doing. I'd like to know.
Give me the status of the truck stop at 62 and 81.
I will. You're looking at
that. We have tried to get in contact with the owners. We have not heard back from them yet. We've been in contact with the meeting we had with ODOT about 2-3 weeks ago. They indicated there were 12 reviews for some of the requests they had, and they have completed 11 of them. So there's still one more review for them to go through at ODOT. But we'd really like to hear back from the owners what their perspective is. So we're going to continue to try to contact them.
And I've spoken with them.
Oh, good.
And they're just, they can't start construction until they know where their access is going to be. So they're, and they fired engineers and they fired someone else. And so they're restructuring and they're still, they can't even build until they know where their access is.
So they call you and not me. That's good. I'm glad they're talking to somebody.
Yeah. And George asked the other day, I can answer, why is a sonic backup drainage wise in those first few stalls? Do you know the answer to that yet?
No, I don't. But I, when I drove by there, I did notice they have just two of those drainages, where the new ones we're building have six or eight. Okay. So that may be one they want to address.
Anybody else? I want to hear some good with the bad.
On the community center, you mentioned the bond issues, there will be some private investment in that as well?
Hopefully. You know, we've been struggling with that. You know, 50-50 deal, 70-30 deal. We think it's a private investment dollars out there. I think, Pat, help me if I say something incorrect. I think the theory now is we can get a good built community center for around $9. Not all the amenities we'd like, but a good solid foundation. But we'd like to go out and ask for private investment to do some extra stuff we'd like to do. But we've been toying around this for 2 years, and I think we're getting behind as a community. And we had the bond capacity with the city. And I think the city needs to take the lead and get it out there and get it going. At the same time, we'll continue to work on private investment. We promise the people that. And hopefully get we could build a good community center, but hopefully the private investment can build a great one. And that's the idea behind that. But we got to get something started.
In terms of where it's going to be located?
There's three locations that we're looking at. One is the depot area. The city has about 7 acres. Down there, my personal perspective, I think my first pick for location, it would vitalize our downtown, set off the east side even more. We put a lot of work on downtown. Came up in Denver, Iowa, as I mentioned, and their YMCA is right in the middle of an old brick building. It's gorgeous. And so that's one spot. Warren Park would be the second area. I have some concerns about that based on traffic flow out there. Fire, entry and egress is a major route for all them. And then we have this 40 acres out here at Eddie Superville by the ballparks, and we've earmarked 10 acres for some type of park situation. So we got three sites we're looking at, and we're looking at which one, but we'll go to the public with a definite site and all the pros and cons to that. And so we'll have that done before we really officially go out and talk to the public. What do you think, Bob? Your thought?
As to which would be better? Yeah. I think I'll just return the comment at this point.
I'll get it to you and Steve later. We'll try to get this. Anybody else? If not, thank you for being here this morning. Guys, public service is fun. It just energizes my heart, and everyone who's in here who does that, if you're not involved, please get involved. It's a lot of fun to try to make a community better, and I appreciate being your mayor. I'm honored to be your mayor. Please contact me anytime with anything that I can do, and so I hope this was a little bit informative, and I'm closing my eyes. I'm thinking about the next 10 years with this town. Thank you.